This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. Let's start 2026 with a hard truth. There's no perfect time to build the future you secretly dream of, and there's no time to waste. With support from a Talkspace therapist, you can make this the year you bravely go out and grab what you need from life, whether that's outer rewards or inner peace. Just go to Talkspace.com to be matched with a licensed online therapist. You can start messaging with your therapist right away and schedule live virtual sessions over video, audio, or chat. Your Talkspace therapist can help you create personalized strategies for making the changes and achieving the goals most important to you. Talkspace accepts most insurance with an average copay of $15, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80. That's SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, with your host, Hurricane H. New day, new show. I would say an amazing morning, an amazing topic, an amazing show with an amazing guest, because we're going to go into a world where we're going to talk about caring for others and just, you know, being positive in a lot of environments of our lives. And, you know, my guest is a life coach. She's an end-of-life doula, and we're going to, you know, try to figure out what that means, you know, for those of us who may be unfamiliar with that word. Definitely a certified grief educator and an entrepreneur. And her work is really phenomenal because she does create pieces of art, I would call them, to help others and to promote positivity and so on and so forth. So I'll leave it at that. You know, my guest is Patty DiMaselli. Patty, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Hurricane. I really appreciate just being with you and your audience.
Well, thank you. And, you know, again, you have a lot to offer to our audience because, listen, our audience is worldwide. And, you know, we live in a world that's somewhat little, there's a lot of darkness in it. Of course, there's a lot of positivity. We want to just shine the light on this world and give a little bit of a positivity to the world. Somehow your work does that. I mean, you really are, you have a mission, you have a company technically that helps, you know, through your product to just bring joy to people in a way, in a different angle, right? And but you really, as I mentioned, you're a life coach. You help some people, you know, during their life, and you're certainly a grief counselor. So we're going to talk about that, because one thing certainly is in life is death. And unfortunately, everybody experiences one way or the other themselves eventually and or through their environment, because we all have friends, family members that have been with us and are no longer with us. And that always continues. And one day we won't be here. Something's going to happen to our loved ones. So let's talk about your work and your journey that got you into where you are today. And you have quite a bit of experience in this world.
Yeah, well, let's see, where shall we start?
I'm thinking well, maybe. Let's go back.
Yeah. So, okay, are you, buckle up. Because
ooh, okay, here we go.
I remember being in the womb. I remember when I opened my eye, I mean, I remember the whole sensation of being in the womb. So connected to life in liquid. So there was no clothing or anything like that. I remember being born which was excruciatingly painful. And I remember emerging into the world. I was born in the City of Angels at the Queen of Angels Hospital, and that was my portal entering this earth. I remember the lights were so bright that I could barely open my eyes. There was clanging instruments. They scratched my skin with, like, it felt like 80 grit sandpaper. Then they slapped me. That was my welcome to this earth. And the worst part was that they cut my connection to life. They cut the umbilical cord. And so, like every human walking this earth that has ever been born, all of us have, we remember these things. We remember them, but not in words because we haven't learned them yet, but it's a visceral memory. They call it preverbal memory. So what do we do now with the rest of our life? Well, like everybody else, I try to find connection to life itself. And so most of us through the life are looking to be reconnected. So that's where my entry was. I had a very, very abusive childhood. One of my therapists had said to me, Patty, on a scale from 1 to 9 or 1 to 10, 10 being war and 1 being, leave it to Beaver, you grew up in a 9, because I kind of denied that because I always try to think on the positive side. So very abusive childhood. But I knew without a doubt that I was an angel in a human cloak. And we are all born angels on this earth. And then, sometimes our human cloak completely hardens and covers up our angel. So I've always known this, even as a very tiny thing. And so I grew through, adolescence and, was a cheerleader and homecoming princess and, tried to get my connection or my love that way. I met and married my daughter Amber's father. Me and a girlfriend, Jan, took a road trip across the country. As I said, I was born in LA, so we came to the East Coast and I met Michael, Amber's father in Vermont. And we had Amber, and I knew that I would die before she was 6. And so I had this premonition. And so I recorded our whole life, every moment, so that she would know me after I died. And so I divorced Michael because he was abusive also. And I left him when Amber was a year and a half. We lived in Connecticut at the time. And so I went to Grand Central Station and took a Greyhound bus back to LA. And we came back to the East Coast about a year later. It was very difficult for me as a single mom to try to make it on my own. So I bought a $10 bicycle. And so we went back to Connecticut and landed at Grand Central Station at rush hour with a wooden suitcase and my $10 bicycle, my daughter, and whatever I could carry. And ended up going back to Connecticut. And as a single mom, it was really difficult. As many single moms and dads know, it was winter time, so I would bundle Amber up, like a little papoose, if you will. Just see her little eyes poking out because it was, snowing, and I would ride my bicycle through the snow, drop her off at daycare, and then head to Waterbury Lock. It was a factory where I worked. I needed to find a better job that paid more money, so I started going around to different construction sites. And I had gotten a car by then. And of course, it was mostly males, and they would laugh at me when I said I would love to have a job. And one guy said, one, supervisor said, hey, if you show up tomorrow, this was roofing on a Denny's restaurant on I-95 just outside of New Haven. He said, if you show up at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning with a tool belt and a hammer, you've got a job. And I did. I was like, amazed. And you know, the first day, of course, my thumb was bloody because I was roofing. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of women in construction. And so there was like a 10% quota by the government. And some folks from the labor union came by Denny's and said, "Hey, we've got a job for you as a laborer in the union for $8.15 an hour." And I'm like, God. So I took that job. There was me and 350 men. And at first they wanted to get rid of me because I was, you know, intruding into their world. But I needed to support Amber and I persisted. So after about 2 weeks, they accepted me. They actually, there was about 20, it was a huge commercial construction site right on the harbor, Teletrack. And out of like 20 of these porta potties, they all said men on them, and they took a marker and put WO in front of one of those, and that was mine. So it was a wonderful thing. So I worked as a laborer, and then I worked in the restaurant of Teletrack, and then I worked as a taper, if you will. So I put sheetrock up and, you know, did all the taping and everything for Yale New Haven Hospital, which was really interesting because I ended up in Yale New Haven Hospital with Amber several months later. So, yeah, I met Gary. I didn't want to meet anybody on the job, any of the men. I just didn't want that hassle. But I did meet Gary. I finally, some friends kept forcing me to, you know, go meet him, and I did. And that was husband number two. He had a sailboat. It was a 1946 Alden sloop. And we rebuilt that sailboat. And we were going to sail to paradise, to the Caribbean. We loaded up this wooden boat. And of course, there was some leaking and other things. So we didn't get to paradise. We were in Milford, Connecticut. And we bought another boat. And it was bigger.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
This one was 45 feet. And we lived aboard that boat with Amber and his son Todd. And we were going to continue, you know, trying to fulfill our dream. And in August of 79, I was renting this room for $25 from Sue Kelly at the time, and when I was working the construction and all. And she had three sons die. I remember Hurricane looking at her, and she was an older woman, but she would like laugh, like uproariously laugh. And I would think, oh my God, how can she laugh? She's had three children die. And I remember looking at Amber, and I was like, oh my God, she's my world. And I couldn't live if she died. So, in August of 79, I discovered a small lump behind Amber's right ear. And I was just stroking her hair, putting her to sleep. And I pulled back her hair and I was like, oh my God, cancer. I did not even know kids got cancer. As soon as I said that in my head, I heard, it's not you who will die, it's Amber. And that really started me on a journey for the rest of my life.
Wow. Well, you weren't kidding about buckling up. I mean, he took us on on a very interesting journey and way back in time, really, in terms of a lot of things, because a lot of things you mentioned probably would be somewhat different and even not clear to some of the, I guess, the newer generation. Because, I mean, you went back to a time where, well, there's a couple of things. One, and I want to highlight that separately, the idea of you even remembering the birth, because, you know, a lot of people say, like, that cannot be possible. You know, we don't even realize that we exist until, like, we're a couple of years older when we start, you know, speaking or thinking and stuff like that. So there's that question. But the other one is really the idea that you talked about, like, for example, your opportunity to even work in a world that was dominated by male and or men. And, you know, that was a big challenge. And for a lot of people today, we're not even realize how that worked. And frankly, we're not talking 100 years ago. This is like only a couple of decades back. And that's a big thing, you know, that's happening. It's really an opportunity for you to show. And frankly, I think you are a pioneer in this, because you were one of the first ones that kind of claimed that role. And frankly, to your point, it was like, who the hell are you to come into our world? This is a man, you know, place. But you did it, right? So it made a difference. But it is amazing for you to share that, because a lot of people would take that for granted today. And, you know, because everybody is pretty much, I mean, we still have the debate of equality, men, women today, but that's a very different level, you know, from where you were there. I mean, you were literally at the onset of it. I mean, people were just like, you were just like, I mean, you mentioned quota. I mean, really, like, let's have a number of female coworkers just to satisfy the government's request. That's something you hear now is like, wow, that was like almost a joke, right? But it was real, and it's only a couple of decades behind us, right? And so that in itself is a lot of journey of life and struggle. And yeah, it sounds easy now as you talk about it, but really, people would not understand what that means to really make it in that world. I mean, even today, it's still difficult, but imagine, you know, how it was then. And again, you talked about, you know, $8. You talked about $25 for a room. I mean, you're giving us some numbers that people like, I mean, you can even get a burger for $25 these days, right? So life has changed tremendously. But that shows the amount of knowledge of life that you've had and the different levels that you've, I mean, to you, I mean, this world has transformed tremendously from that point to today and where we are, right? I mean, now we have AI and we have, you know, Generation Alpha. I mean, we have, you know, we've gone through a whole different alphabet, you know, streak, you know, of generations already. And so that's one. But I want to go back to that concept of, you know, birth, where you were literally, you mentioned that, you know, was it, you call it proverbial, you know,
preverbal
memory. You know, memory. I mean, it's something that people's like, what, can you really even remember that? As a matter of fact, you know, some people do claim that. I mean, I remember some stuff that I was like maybe 1 or 2 years old, you know, like literally vividly, and people say that you couldn't possibly do that. Now, you know, I know what I remember, but in the womb, delivering, feeling all that sensation, I mean, that's actually a little bit too much for most people to even comprehend. So was it really something that you just realized now? I mean, as you got older, or from the get-go, you were able to be aware?
Oh, yes. And again, I'm not unique and unusual in this way. It's every human. I remember the sort of yellowy pink transparency of the skin, you know, my mother's belly, you know, like opening my eyes and seeing that color. And, you know, people don't really think too much about, not everybody, but a lot of people don't think about the baby's experience. I mean, it is painful. If you can imagine hurricane, I mean, don't, you know, brace yourself, because if you can imagine right now, your body going, being literally for hours pushed and squeezed and squeezed and pushed and pushed. I mean, can you imagine that? That would be extremely painful.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just thinking about it is painful.
Ouch. Ooh, cringe,
that's right.
Right? So, yeah, and these memories, again, they're sensations. It's visceral. It, you know, like van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. I mean, it couldn't be more true. So, yeah, most people do remember. And as a matter of fact, when Amber was like 3 years old, I have an audio tape of her describing her birth which was amazing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, so is this something just specific to you, I guess, and your family in a way? I mean, compared to many others that may. Now, by the way, someone in this particular audience can probably relate to that. I mean, again, I'm sure someone says, like, I had experienced that, or I know someone who did. But again, because I mean, but to be honest with you, I mean, I haven't met a lot of people that actually claim to have experienced that from that point of the onset of life. I mean, like I said, maybe a couple of years later, they have memories when they develop. I mean, even think from a scientific perspective, they might say, that doesn't work that way because you need to build memory, blah, blah, blah. And again, I do believe in that this world has a lot more to offer in the unknown. I mean, we talk about quantum physics now, so that explains a lot of things that we couldn't possibly comprehend before. So some people can understand, this, or at least can relate to it from there because they open their horizons a little bit further in terms of like what this word means, how it operates, and so on and so forth. We go beyond the obvious. But not everybody, and a lot of people are stuck into the mathematical stuff, right? We know 1 + 1 = two, and so therefore, you could not possibly have, realized, the pain and experience everything and stuff. Now, we do experience things, like, for example, we know that we had, I mean, if you have any kids, you know that your kids cried, they had pain and stuff, but the ability to remember, every single moment of those or not. I mean, technically, even if you review your whole life, can review every moment, you're like samples of moments. I mean, you can, everybody, I've done this exercise before. I tell people, just close your eyes and just look back in your life, and you're gonna like basically see a quick movie that goes in. It's about less than 2 minutes worth. Doesn't matter how long you lived. And you're gonna be see all the critical moments of your life, from the beginning to the end that you can recall. But that's memory based, right? But yours, you're talking about something beyond that. It's sensation. And your daughter had the same thing. Now, I do have something to ask. I mean, well, there's a couple of things. One is you talked about a very, as I would call it, brutal upbringing, very violent, kind of environment to be raised in. And I mean, and by the way, that's a problem that, that still exists. People still have maybe sometimes environments where they're being bullied, at home, or they're just, getting a lot of violence type of environment that is not healthy. And that actually is a problem. I mean, by the way, I have to say, for someone who's experienced a lot of this, you've done well, helping people today and changed, your dynamics to a positive outlook and outcome in this life. How, some people, they, that stuff can make them bad, in terms of, and that's what we have sometimes, crime and so on and so forth, because people are holding to these things, and that's their way of almost coming back at the world, right? And so they become, maybe negative driven, right? So, and so they do bad things. But you've done the opposite. You've gone through all these bad experiences, but yet you were able to transform your life to something positive, to someone that actually is mission driven towards helping others. So that's one. The other thing is you talked about the idea of you recording your life because you thought you, well, at least that's the question I have. I mean, how did you, what made you think that you were going to go before Amber? I mean, because most of our, us, I mean, yes, as parents, especially if you have parents and children, right? Like, you kind of don't want your parents to go, and you don't want to go before your kids, and it's like a very challenging thing, and nobody knows, who goes when, so I mean, that's the thing. Part of life mystery is that we die, and there is no age limit to that. I mean, people go early birth, to 100 plus, so we don't know, and you can never know when is your time and who is going to go first. I mean, if you have a family, you have husband, wife, kids, parents, someone can go. I mean, many parents bury their children, many children bury their parents, marry husbands, bury their wives, wives marry. So it's very difficult how to do this. But you kind of had this premonition, as you said, that you're going to have something, but it turned out to be something different. Now, what made you think that? I mean, that's the first question I have.
I didn't think it like a thought, like I'm thinking, here I am sitting in my tiny home and, having a wonderful conversation with you. Though that's a thought. It was more of a sense, like a knowing without words. It's, if you want to call it a gut or an intuition, yeah, I mean, it was a sense. I just had this sense. And I've always been connected to the other side by like a golden thread. So the divine, the source, the universe, I don't know if people have different words for it. I prefer the divine. And I knew that I was always connected to the divine. And I kept those channels open throughout my life. Now, have I sat at the bottom of my shower, like in despair, crying tears, letting them go down the drain? Heck yes. And do I still? Sometimes. Because that's all part of being human. That's the human cloak that I'm wearing. And I'm so cognizant of that. But yeah, I am connected. And Hurricane, the coolest thing ever is that Amber was my greatest teacher. She taught me what happens when our bodies die. And I tell you what, she gave me a miracle the moment she stopped breathing. So can I briefly tell you, just briefly?
Please.
Yeah. So after I discovered the tumor, I took her to 8 different doctors around the state of Connecticut, trying to convince them to biopsy this. In the meantime, it was growing. So even the head of pediatric surgery at Hartford Hospital just said, you know, lots of kids get lots of lumps and bumps. By this time, it was the size of a golf ball. And they said it couldn't possibly be cancer. So she fell, hit it on a fireplace, and it doubled. I rushed her to the emergency room, and they said, we're going to operate tomorrow. Even then, they were saying it couldn't possibly be cancer. So they operated, they removed or excised the tumor, and it was cancer. It was in the third stage because they found a few cells in her spinal fluid. So then they were saying chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, that's all there is. I'm like, wait a minute, we can send a man to the moon, but we can't, there's nothing else with cancer? No, this is all there is. So I ended up, this was before PCs, mind you. I couldn't Google anything. But I ended up going to the New Haven Register and begging them, please, would you please print a story so that I can ask people around the world, are there any other therapies for cancer? So they did. We put it right on the front page, you know, above the fold. And the Associated Press picked the story up and it went around the world and people were like, you know, calling and sending telegrams. And I have all of that documented. And we ended up, I did give her radiation to the area. So she did lose her hair, but I didn't want to give her chemotherapy. And at that time, and it may still be happening, but at that time, if you didn't give your children chemotherapy, they took your children away from you and made them a ward of the court. And I've known parents that have had this happen to them. So I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm a good mom and they can't take her away from me. So that's why I wanted to go public, because I wanted this open. I didn't want any, you know, police cars showing up and taking Amber away. So anyway, we ended up, I got an angel to help us, Mrs. Barbara Newington, and she actually found Dr. Burton, Lawrence Burton. He was one of the founders of immunotherapy in New York, St. Vincent's Hospital. They kicked him out of the U.S. because immunotherapy was experimental at the time, like chemotherapy, but he ended up, they said, you can't, you know, practice this on any American citizen. So he ended up going to the Bahamas, Freeport. And he opened a clinic. It was just a clinic. And so we ended up, Mrs. Newington paid for us to stay. You have to stay in a hotel because it wasn't a hospital. There's no facilities. So there's different hotel complexes. And so we went there, and immunotherapy basically at the time involves drawing Amber's blood. And I did that 3 times a day. And then I take my $10 bicycle and ride down to the clinic with her blood. They measure certain protein fractions to make up your immune system. And then they gave me 4 1cc syringes. And I would have to inject her every hour with these, with the protein fractions. That was the therapy. And to get her used to the therapy, we had her draw, Gary came with us, and we had her draw Gary's blood. And I actually have photographs. It's documented in our book. I say our because Amber wrote it and I typed it. So a lot of photographs I took. I basically am kind of a documentation freak. But anyway, so then 2 weeks after we arrived in Freeport, he was on 60 Minutes. That was Sunday at 7. on Monday morning, people were around the block. They had come from all over the world because that was their last ditch effort. So I started helping out at the clinic. I would just go down the line and draw people's blood. And then I'd go to different complexes and draw their blood and take it to the clinic. And the therapy worked because you could see a small metastasis that was growing, but it flattened out. And then she got tonsillitis, couldn't keep up. You know, the immune system could not keep up. So then it started to grow again. And because we were in the newspapers, the media had followed our story. We couldn't find an American surgeon to what they call debulk the tumor, which means take what you can, and then the immunotherapy would work on the rest. So Dr. Burton actually paid for surgeons from Montreal, Canada to come to Freeport, and David Stewart, who owns hospitals in Montreal, said, look, bring her up to Montreal and we will assemble a team of surgeons and see if we can save her life. So that's what we did. And Dr. Burton gave us $1,000 to spend while we were there. And she was in the hospital for a week, Children's Hospital, and they couldn't save her. So we came back to the Bahamas, but now it was twice as big. And we needed to have the tumor debulked. And so we were looking for an American surgeon to help us. But again, nobody wanted to, you know, get in the middle of the media. So Dr. Bernie Siegel, who has written many, many books, reached out and said, hey, I will treat Amber as my own child, and I will assemble a team of surgeons. So Bernie, we came back to the U.S., and he did. She was in St. Raphael's Hospital for a week. And as they were conducting tests and such, I was down in the gift shop getting a little something for her, just to kind of cheer her up. And so I heard, I say that with air quotes, I heard while I was standing in line, turn around, and I turned around, and get this. I saw these big, gigantic gold keys, and I heard, give this to Amber and tell her it's the key to heaven so she can open up the golden gates. So she was discharged. We brought her home basically to die. She wanted to die at home. She knew she was dying. Most children do know they're dying. And I have not met a child yet that's afraid to die. They're afraid to leave the loved ones behind. That's what the fear is. So we brought her home to die. We made her a rainbow room. And, again, I recorded every waking moment that she was alive. She said so many things, and I'm writing another book. I cataloged all those words, Amber's words of wisdom. So anyway, it's amazing. Two things that she said to me stand out. She said, Mom, I know I'm here to help a lot of people. And she was saying it very low. And I went over to her and I bent down. I said, what did you say, Amber? She was annoyed because she had to repeat herself. So she's like, I said, I know I'm here to help a lot of people. Because people were sending her things from all over the world. I was just like taken aback. But the second thing she said to me that I remember offhand that changed my life, she said, Mom, when I die, I'll still be Amber. I'll just be different. So she chose the clothes she wanted to go into heaven in. She held on to the golden key, and she slipped into a coma just after midnight on my 27th birthday. And so we brought her down to the sofa. She was breathing quite heavily, and there's a lot of space in between her breaths. And I have a recording of this, and I'm so blessed that I do, because it would have slipped into history and been forgotten. But I was talking to her and I was saying, I love you so much, Amber. Thank you for coming and showing me what love feels like and what it means. She was in a coma, but then tears started to come down. So I wiped away her tears and I continued telling her every single thing I wanted her to know. And what I realized was she wasn't afraid to die, but she was afraid to leave me. And then a whole bunch of tears started coming down. And I wiped them away. I said, Amber, I'll be okay. I'll be okay, Amber. Go now. Be with God. Be with God, Amber. As soon as I said those words, she stopped breathing. And I physically, like goosebumps times a million in every cell of my body, I literally physically felt her leave her body, pass through mine, and return to the light. It was a physical sensation. And all I could say was, thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you. I was just so grateful. And what I had written about in the journal that I kept, which is in Embrace the Angel, and you can get a free ebook on our website, embracetheangel.com, by the way. But it was the opposite. What I wrote about was, oh my God, if Amber dies, I will die. There's no way I could live. And I quite graphically described what would happen. You know, I'd fall on the floor, weeping uncontrollably. And it was the opposite. I was filled with so much gratitude and grace and light. And that sensation lasted for several days. So after she died, we couldn't get somebody to come to the house to pronounce her dead. So a few days before she died, I was calling, you know, hospice was supposed to do that, but I had to give her morphine because by that time the tumor was like as much inside as outside of her head. So I was literally watching her get eaten alive by cancer. It was quite big. And so Bernie had prescribed the morphine, but hospice felt that I was giving her too much, but she was lucid for sure. So they didn't want to come. And then hospice has come a long way since then, by the way. That was when hospice first started. So I couldn't get the police or ambulance. I couldn't get anybody to pronounce her dead. So I called Bernie. I said, hey, Bernie, can you come and pronounce Amber dead? Because I can't find anybody. He said, well, I might be in surgery, Patty, so I can't promise that. So he said, just take her body and put it in the back of your car and bring her to St. Raphael's, and I will have people meeting you there. So after she died, Gary and I put her in the back of my Volkswagen Squareback, and I'm driving to St. Raphael's on I-95, passing that Denny's that I work on the roof, passing Teletrack, and right before I got to the hospital, I heard, again in air quotes, pull over, take a picture of Amber. People need to see dead. And I did. I just pulled over, opened up the hatchback, took one photo, got back in the car and drove to St. Raphael's. When we arrived, they brought a stretcher out to meet us. And I put her on the stretcher and wheeled her into the hospital. The doors parted and there must have been 100 people there, all crying and holding each other, and because they had read and saw it on TV. And so I brought her body, you know, into the emergency area there. And I remember the tumor was huge. I remember looking at that tumor, and it was at that very moment that the rage and hatred, and I don't use that word very often, if at all, but the rage against cancer and how it had eaten her alive and how it had taken so many people really came to the surface. And I had to tamp that way down. So they came and told us that the coroner was there, that the funeral director was there. So I wheeled her body down into the bowels of the hospital. And there, at the end of a very long hall, there was a man in black. He had a body bag on a stretcher. And I brought Amber to him. I lifted her up, put her on the body bag, and I left my body at that time. It was like I was watching it from the ceiling. And I remember kissing her lips, and they were cold. But I remember the love I felt for her, and as much rage as I had felt moments before, I was overwhelmed with love. And it's that love and Amber's legacy that I'm living today. And this is almost 45 years later. And I haven't stopped living that legacy.
I mean, I'm listening to you. It's just so much. I mean, it's for any parent to even endure. And I have to say, I mean, your way of handling all this and also the commitment you've put in to try to do whatever it took at the time to give her a chance to be with us, right? And, you know, for every parent, I'm pretty sure if they have children, they love their kids, they would do whatever it takes the same way. But listening to some of the things that you had to go through, again, because of times and how the conditions were, I mean, today where we have a whole different world of approach on cancer and things, and we have advancements and so on, and even the medicine, everything has changed. But you're talking about an era where you would go, they would take your child away from you if you couldn't even put a treatment that they actually recommended. I mean, it is unbelievable just to hear that. And you had to go through, you know, taking her to different, you know, literally overseas and to get served and serviced and fixed and helped. And you had people from Canada. I mean, you had to go to an international world, you know, to actually get, you know, some of the stuff done. It's amazing that, you know, that even existed, I have to say. I mean, it's like, again, for someone that's watching or listening, I mean, obviously we broadcast worldwide, but at least if you're in the US and you're listening to this, I mean, this is what it was, you know. I mean, you're talking about 47 years ago. It's not a long time ago, folks. I mean, talking like in the 80s and 70s, right? So it's not, you know, it's amazing how this world has transited to where we are today. But you are one of many stories, I'm sure, that had, you know, maybe similar experiences at the time. That's one. Now, how old was Amber at the time?
I discovered the tumor when she was 3.5, and she died when she was 4.5. And at that half, you know, that makes a big difference. Yeah.
Every moment counts.
Pardon?
Every moment counts. I mean, you know, it's an eternity because, listen, anyone, again, who has loved ones that departed, right? You know, they will cherish every single second that's available to them. And if you didn't, you will regret every second that you missed, by the way. And by the way, that goes for anybody that's your parents or potentially your loved ones in general. But, you know, like, for example, I lost my dad, and, you know, obviously that's standard. Everybody eventually, you know, parents go, and then, you know, you survive them in a way. But every moment that I wish I had more time with him, I wish I could have done more things with him, I wish I had, you know, the pleasure of spending more, you know, years and stuff, especially when life happens, you move on, you know, a lot of kids, you know, they don't realize that, you know, until it's too late. And then like, wow, you know, where the time goes, you know, and time flies actually when you're having fun or not having fun, it really goes away. And before you know it, it's like, wow, you can't catch it. So that's not really the core of that. But what I was going to talk about is that the experience itself for you. And I mean, it is amazing how, and by the way, children are unique. I mean, first of all, they're innocent. And you're right. I mean, they couldn't have acquired any sins in this world, nothing. They're pure. They haven't been corrupted in a way. And so therefore their souls are just basically purified, you know, at all. So, you know, that's one thing. I mean, by the way, that is a common denominator across all beliefs. Absolutely. I don't think any religion will, you know, kind of argue about the fact that when children die, they basically are in heaven. Maybe we can disagree about adults because of our actions, but when we're talking about kids, I mean, you know, we believe that is all fact, and I think that's all that goes for all major beliefs systems in around the world. So in essence, I mean, whatever you felt, I mean, it's, you know, it feels right, it feels righteous, and that's why I asked about the question about the age, because that just confirms, you know, to audiences that this is a pure person, a pure soul. And so again, someone who has not lived to get corrupted with this worldly, you know, environment that we live in and all the bad stuff that happens, because we all get tempted eventually as we get older, we get caught up in the mix of things. And so we have different, you know, acquisition of bad things, if you want to call them, you know, sins, whatever you want to call them. But yeah, the fact that that's real, right? But in this, you know, eventuality, you know, she is a truly, I mean, she is a baby, I mean, still. And first of all, I mean, my heart, you know, goes to you and anyone who've lost their children, you know, at any, by the way, you lose your child no matter what age, it's going to be brutal. But certainly at that age, it's even harder because, you know, this is a life that you just, you know, it hasn't even bloomed yet in a way, right? You know, but there's so much that happened and to you and then, you know, obviously she transited but you've picked up, you know, all this vibe, and you've been carrying that legacy through the book that you wrote, you know, which is Embrace Your Angel, and also through the work that you do today, and also understanding this whole transition. You also, I think you laid the ground to a lot of people behind, you know, in terms of like the work you do now and the story that you've you know, been working on throughout all these years. So that's another one. Now, when was the most crucial moment for you, you know, to really, because what you said was interesting, is that you had almost described yourself as you're going to be going crazy if that have happened, but it didn't. You know, so what was it that moment that she kind of, that you felt her presence when she departed? Was it, you know, just the fact that you knew that she's in a better place? What was that main, you know, trigger?
Well, I truly, with all my heart, know that our children are the wise ones. Our children and our elders who have not been jaded, if you will, and our animals, they are the wise ones. It's those of us that are, you know, like you said, getting, you know, polluted and, you know, making choices and whatever. We are all innocent when we're born. We are all angels in a human cloak, all of us. And it's that angelic part that some people know, like me, and I've always known. So where I think the real dilemma, if you will, comes is free will. That was God's gift to us, free will. Right, wrong, good, bad, left, right. I mean, it's a choice.
A choice. Yep.
It is a choice. And so, you know, like the last husband, I was married 3 times. The last husband was a malignant narcissist. And he almost killed me. And I realized just how horrific the experience was when I was in the basement, inconsolably crying to a girlfriend in England. And she said, "Patty, you've already had the worst thing happen to you." And I said, "No, Susan, Amber's death was not the worst thing. Being married to a malignant narcissist was much, much worse for me." Now, when I heard myself say that out loud, I actually heard myself. I was thinking, oh my God, this is really, really bad. You see, Amber's life and death has meaning and purpose and power. And she has helped millions of people around the world with just that one sentence alone, aside from many other things she said. "Mom, when I die, I'll still be Amber. I'll just be different. Amber never left. I didn't lose a daughter. She didn't pass away. Her body, her cloak, died. But she never left. And you know, I've always known this."
Thank you. And it is something that worth noting right now too, for all of us. And again, I because we're worldwide, there's different beliefs out there, right? But the fact is, I think everybody can agree on one concept, is that we know that the body that we have, this is a temporary body. It is an avatar in a way, right? Our soul is really who we are. And that's the true essence of ourselves that is actually connected to the divine, by the divine. And so that, and by the way, again, that can pretty much be an agreement across all the main religions of the world, right? So I think we all have variations of how we see it, but I think when it comes to the core of who we are and how we're connected to the beyond and to divinity, you know, concepts of energy and life and real, all that stuff becomes pretty clear, or at least similar to across the board. But the fact is, we just transit from one body to another in a way, but the soul is really the same. The soul never dies. The body dies. I mean, there are beliefs where anybody that believes in, you know, a judgment day, for example, would know that, you know, we will reconnect with this body again and basically have, you know, final judgment, if you want to call it that way. So some of the main denominations of world religions believe in that. Now, this is not a religious talk show, but, you know, this is the thing. But you're right. The fact is that the soul transcends and moves on to the next level and the next level. And I think every major religion has that level of, you know, I guess, phases of where that soul transits until the final abode or the final destination, which will be, you know, as we, some people will refer to it, heaven or the other place, right? So, but we have that. But we do know, I think across again, what we understand is that anybody who is a child is basically automatically straight up to the best place. And there's no doubt about that. And actually, that's a beautiful thing to know that our loved ones, you know, they go to a much nicer place. I mean, who doesn't want someone, if you have anybody and you tell them, like, they're going to go live in the best palace and have all the service and everything they want with everything they need. Who doesn't want that? That's a life. So we just thinking about that makes us positive. And I love what you said. It might have been difficult. It might have been, but it's not the same because you knew that she was in a better place. In the events of your relationship, for example, that is not the same thing. I mean, that's just bad experience with someone that is not really appropriate to be with, right? So that's different. Now with, and so I know one, the reason I was talking about this whole thing about the soul moving away, because you mentioned it a couple of times, and people sometimes like, well, what do you know? I mean, we are energy based. There is something that is operating us, and that's the soul. And again, that is no difficult, you know, there's no debate about that, no matter what belief. I mean, whether you're Christian, Jewish, Muslim, other, you know, denominations, Hinduism, all these, I think they all have the same concept of the core or the source of, or the energy, or the, as we commonly refer to it as soul, right? So that's a fact. So what you're stated there is very correct. It's very, you know, acceptable in the minds of most of the people watching and listening, you know, and someone can debate that, of course, and, you know, that's okay. Everybody's got their opinion. As you said, we have free will. So that means we have a decision-making, you know, capabilities. We can choose one or the other to see or not to see it. But we do know that this world, as you said, we come in, we depart, and then we go places. Now, again, whatever happens here, I mean, this world has a mission. We have a purpose of life, right? Now, in your mind, what based on your experience, what that purpose is in this world? What is our purpose based on what you've seen, what you've experienced, and the work you do today? Are you fulfilling that purpose?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, as I mentioned early on, that the challenges, problems, circumstances, turmoil, despair, you know, all of the things that every human experiences. Brené Brown, one of my favorite authors, in her book, Daring Greatly, talks about, and she studied it. She paused the moment. So you're in the arena, Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena, 1910 speech, which I love. He talks about being in the arena. And when you're knocked down and your face is on the floor, Brené pauses that moment and studies it. What makes some people stay down and give up? And what makes others rise again to fight another day? And I'm fascinated by that because, oh, golly, I have had countless times in my human life where I feel like giving up. I really do. I'm like, okay, God, enough already. You know, please stop. But here I am. I got out of bed, put one foot on the floor, put another foot on the floor. I went one tiny step. So I believe, and actually I have it here. I love this thing. It says, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. And so I keep that because I believe, well, this is what I know. So I'm a pebble thrower, and I've done this for about 15 years now. I know I'm a pebble thrower in the still pond of life. So as I go through my life, doesn't matter where I am, I carry this really cool blue pouch. And I say, if I'm in the grocery store or somebody's cleaning a public bathroom or whatever, and I feel led, I'll say, oh, wait, I have something for you. And I tell them I'm a pebble thrower in the still pond of life. And they look at me like, and I'm reading their mind. They look at me.
What does that mean?
I know. They're like, oh, God, can I trust her? Is it religious? Is she selling me something? I mean, the whole thing boils down to trust. Can I trust her? They look into my eyes. They see my angel. And they trust me. And I've done this thousands of times. So then I say, these are my pebbles. And I hold this little pouch out, if you can see it. And I say, take one for yourself and one for someone you love. And they do. And then they become pebble throwers. It's the coolest thing. So these are the cards, and it says embrace the angel, and it talks about angels. And on the back, there's a little guardian angel coin, a little pewter coin. And I say, if you want, there's a special word on the back that comes straight from the angels. Do you want to see what it is? And they peel it off. I'll do that now. They peel off the coin. And there's one of five words. Who knew? This one's love. And so there's love, hope, faith, courage, and peace. And so then they take their pebble and they give it to someone they love. So it's the little ripples. It's the tiny, tiny acts of kindness. I mean, we have Danforth Pewter. We call them our angel factory. They make these little coins up in Middlebury, Vermont. And so it's those tiny little acts. It doesn't have to be, you know, Carnegie Hall, right? It doesn't have to be grand. People, when they see me, when I give these to them, I mean, I've watched people like miracles. People drop to the floor weeping uncontrollably. People rush me and like hug me and cry because, you know, their father died or their grandmother just died and that one word changed their life. And how blessed am I, Hurricane, to be gifted with this power? I'm so blessed. I have my company, Tobias & Company. We have different products. I've taken photographs around the world. So we put them onto silk scarves and ties and pillows. And that company supports our angel work, Embrace the Angel, which we call our giving back division, which I'm now just beginning to form a 501c3, and I'm really excited about it because I've been doing this, supporting it pretty much on my own for quite some time. But now we have, you know, silk satin pillows filled with drawings of angels that kids have made. And I do the artwork because I'm a graphic artist. So I do the artwork, send the artwork to China. They provide these silk satin pillows and ties and scarves, and we donate those. But without Tobias & Company or without creating a charity, it would just all die, if you will. So I need help. I can't do this alone. And I know that it's very difficult for me to ask for help. But now I realize I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for them. I'm asking for the people that are dying and grieving around the world. And anyway, I'm really excited. So we're going to do the 501c3 for Embrace the Angel. And, you know, I just pray that I can stay healthy enough and, you know, keep my legacy of Amber alive and fulfill what she's meant to do here on Earth, help a lot of people.
Well, thank you, Patty, for sharing that, because, I mean, you know, I think your purpose is so clear, is that you are here to convey that message of love and hope and not giving up and just continue to work and just keeping people in a positive light, right? And by the way, that's a beautiful mission. And you know, you and I, we had a brief discussion before the show about how we need more of this world, you know, positivity. And I mean, there's so much going on in around us, right? And the more you come and touch someone with a gesture like this, I mean, when you say I'm a pebble, you know, thrower, you know, kind of, you know, concept, I mean, I figured that you're creating some ripple effect, right? And that's what you have. It's like every time you touch one person, and those are strangers, right? It's not even like, you know, it's random. Hey, pick one. And again, by the way, those five things that you just enumerated there, I mean, if we live by those five codes, I mean, life will be a lot better for everyone. I mean, you know, because it's, you have love, you have peace, you have faith, you have all the core pillars of what we should be as humans, right? And any one of us can use those at any given moment, if not all. I mean, actually, if we can combine them all, that's a good person. We will have the best of all the best, right? But you know, unfortunately, we all get caught up in the reality of this world, and it's difficult. And you're right, some of the stuff doesn't come, you know, there's nothing free in this world, of course, you know, so you got to still live, you got to survive, and so on and so forth. But to carry a mission like this, you do need to support it financially, and you're doing that through your company, and now with the the I guess the charitable, you know, I guess 501c3. What is the code for it? Did I say 501?
501c3. Yeah.
Yeah, 501c3. So now that's actually not for profit. That means you can actually have, you know, charity. You can have different things. You know, even grants and so on and so forth. So there's more stuff. And by the way, a lot of businesses do have a charity. I mean, if even the biggest, you know, companies or the biggest success people, they do have their own charity, you know, stuff where there's tax credits. There's all kind of stuff that happens. But at the core is really what the mission is, and your mission is still driven to help people. And of course, I mean, you mentioned ties and scarves and stuff. You know, those are things of life, right? We all use them. I mean, everybody uses a pillow. Yeah, I think, you know, unless you sleep, you know, with no one, but no pillow. But really, these are things of life. You work, you put a tie on, and women love scarves. I mean, so these are things that are like, you know, generic stuff that we live with, creates some sort of revenue, of course. And, you know, now you have the ability to do more work of the mission that you chose. And it is part of it. The book is already existent. You've had it for a minute now. That's also part of your legacy, or Amber's legacy, because as you said, she wrote it. I mean, she put it together. You just put it, you just printed it or typed it, as you said, you know, so it's part of the work you do. Now, what would you tell people in general about grieving and about, you know, not giving up in life, if you want to just put it in one simple sentence?
Well, I'll tell you, when somebody gets the word hope on the back of one of those little guardian angel coins, I always remind them of a beautiful quote by George Isle, that hope is faith holding out its hand in the dark. It's not religion, it's believing. When you're in the dark, if you can hold out your hand to receive, and believe that you will receive if you're willing to be open and vulnerable. Hope is faith holding out its hand in the dark.
Powerful. Well, you're right. I mean, faith by concept is believing, right? Without seeing. I mean, you have to have, it's a blind faith, really. I mean, we take it for what it is without having to see the factual piece of it. And that's a big thing. And, you know, you're right. We all hope for better, but you add to it a little bit of belief and things start manifesting. And by the way, this stuff works. I mean, for anyone out there, if you use these things, I mean, some people say like, I don't do the woohoo stuff, and this is too kind of on the extreme side. Well, you might want to try some of that. You'll be surprised what you're going to find there, right? And there are stories, you know, thousands and if not millions of stories of similar things that are happening around the world where people are putting their hand into, you know, a good fate, you know, and they follow that and they do the right thing, and things can change for their life. And it's really, again, acceptance too. I mean, there's a level that, I mean, when you do the grievance work, right? And then now, yeah, I wanted to go back actually, just before I forget, the doula, you know, what does that mean? before I forget that one.
Yeah. So I was certified by the International End of Life Doula Association, INELDA is what it's called. And, basically, it's not hospice. We do work with hospices, various hospices, and that's more a clinical, you know, they do the meds and they, you know, work with the body quite a lot. They do have volunteers that visit, but those visits are pretty brief for the most part. And so basically where a doula would fit in basically is to make sure that the person who's dying is honored. Their life is honored. The person, I mean, looking into, I work a lot with elders. I have many elder clients. And I look into their eyes. I see the human that's there. I recognize, I hear them. I validate who they are. One of my clients is 97, Minabel, and I have a big 10-time lighted magnifying glass. Her family brings in photographs, and then we take that magnifying glass and take each photo and we look at it, and she begins to tell me her life story. And a lot of laughter. I mean, I spend 2 hours once a week with her. We laugh almost the whole time. And so it's that sort of heart-to-heart, angel-to-angel experience. And you recognize and honor that. ritual is a big part of it. You work with the person dying and also their family. You know, you work with various modalities like aromatherapy, music, light touch. You listen to the person. I mean, I've been told so many things and feel blessed and honored that they trust me with their most innermost thoughts and feelings. But basically, you help to make that death. You help to complete the circle, if you will. You're born, you live your life, you're dying, and you want to make sure that you can connect that circle of life and death. And so a lot of it's physical, very gentle, very respectful. But some of it is emotional, where they can't talk about dying with anybody. And so you basically fill in the blanks. But Inelda has a lot of various materials that you, not only training and monthly like webinars, but there's a lot out there and the need is so very great. And I work a lot with pet loss, folks that, you know, whose pets are dying. So I do doula work with pets and when they're passed on or when they die. So pet loss is a huge, huge, huge area that I serve, but also the need is so great. Because the love of an animal, sorry, humans, but sometimes it's even more wonderful than human love, you know?
Oh, listen, love is love, right? And some people, they don't have maybe people and they do tend to cherish their furry friends and they become, I mean, listen, I have a couple of cats and I love them and, you know, I wouldn't give them up for anything, right? So and we only had them for a year, but it sounds like an eternity and they're part of the fabric. You miss them every time you're not seeing them. Right. And you're right. It builds that, you know, it's different. And by the way, again, human, of course, if you have your family members, no one wants to lose their family members. It's part of you, but you're right at that moment, the transition part, it's very difficult. Anyone who's experienced someone, loved one that's going, it's not to see them towards that latter part of it. And when they deem them, that's basically end of life. You know, a terminal, it becomes very difficult. And you're right, the more someone can, and by the way, this is very common practices, at least I know in the States we have that, and I'm sure it's other parts of the world, you have clergies, you have, in your case, doulas for these, you know, I guess, final days where someone come in and supports you and prepares you, basically. And even the family, because I think there's work with the patients, but also with their loved ones. And just so they can be comfortable with that transition and just get prepared that this is imminent, it's happening. And by the way, so there's this one note I want to just give people is that we all are technically just on a time frame that is going towards the same destination. We all are just, you know, clocks away from from anyone else that is earlier than us into departing this world. At the end of the day, once you're born, the clock starts ticking and that's all there is. And the more we accept that, the better, easier for us, I would say, in accepting the rule, you know, of life. And as you said, life and death are all tied in. And by the way, as we said earlier, that, you know, is the beginning of a new life. And so as long as we accept that, the problem is people don't come back to us physically to tell us. And, you know, it's there's a lot of speculations on it, although we do have, you know, religious, you know, facts and faith and all the stuff and books and things like that. And a lot of similar beliefs around the world that have the same concept that, yes, it is real. There is a life after that and so on and so forth. But people sometimes, they don't want to believe in that. And that rejection sometimes becomes very difficult, but the acceptance of it is just a natural process, you know? And the more we do help, you know, I guess in that transition, you know, you ease people's pain in a way and people just be comfortable with it. Now, again, it's still difficult, folks. This is not taking away from that feel that you're going to feel, you know, the feelings that you're going to get, you know, at the time. That moment of grief is going to happen regardless. And when you love someone, you would probably cry, you're going to feel, you know, you're going to miss them. But the one thing I can tell you, and at least, you know, in my personal experience, when my dad's gone, he's not gone. I still, you know, I have him with me at all times. Now he's not physically here, but I'm, you know, it's like the connection is physically, you're not there. I mean, the way I relate to it is very simple. It's like when someone goes away on vacation for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, right? they're in a different country, a different place, and you know, you might not even talk to them all the time, right? Every now and then you check in, but you know, that's all there is. So technically, they are in a different time frame, or time zone, or a time, you know, dimension, and we're in this dimension. But really, that's the same destination with all of us. We're all going to wind up in the same place eventually, you know, in that world. And so, at the end of the day, that's how I look at it. So it kind of eases my mind in a way to understand the. But that's just my way of doing it. Some people say like, "Well, Hurricane, you're nuts." I'm not. I'm more realistic. I know that's a fact of life, literally that. And so it's the more you start accepting that it's going to happen to you or to anyone else, you know, you're going to go there, and eventually we're all going to be in that world. So at the end of the day, that's how I see it. So it kind of helps. But your work brings it closer to people. And so it makes a difference in their world, in their family, you know, aspect of things. And certainly, I'm sure you've gotten some compliments about it, because, you know, those people that have their loved ones departing, they need sometimes to hear those things and have someone to just talk to. And yeah. So it must be the most fulfilling purpose, you know, to have that in terms of the work you do. And now I don't know how often you do this. I mean, because you still run your operation, but I'm sure you do enough of it that now there is a question that comes and someone can ask is like, is it difficult for you to meet all these people that are probably going to be gone in hours or days?
Yeah, people are like, "You do what?" And they, oh my God, I could never do that. Well, it's just like, I could never lose Amber. I would die if she died. I mean, I could say that, but that was not true for me. You know, honestly, I don't like feel compelled to change anybody's mind or to, you know, make them believe what I believe. I don't really feel like I need to do that. What I need to do is share what I've experienced myself. I'm an expert on me. That's it. And that's all I can make claim for. You know, when people, when they struggle, because I get it. I mean, look, infinity, we cannot wrap our little pea brains around the concept of infinity. I can't. But it reminds me of the wind. Can you see the wind? No. Can you hold the wind? Mm-mm. You can't capture the wind. You can create wind. But what you do see is the effects that the wind has. But you can't see it, touch it, smell it, taste it, hear it. Well, you can hear it going through the trees. But my point is that the wind exists, whether you believe it or not.
Well, again, it's like, you know, consciousness, right? Mind. I mean, there's so many other types of analogies that we can bring into this fact. But you're right. The concept of infinity is just, you know what it is? We're limited in terms of our capacity of understanding a lot of things around us. And because we have that limitation, you know, we tend to kind of reject a lot of the stuff that we don't understand. And that's just one of the things we don't understand fully. Is really what happens after we did depart this world. And, you know, but fact is, if you blink back, you mentioned yourself, for example, with the experience of being born. But until that point, we kind of, did we exist? Did we not exist? Were we in somewhere else? I mean, technically, we were somewhere else. As a matter of fact, we were, before even this world, we were somewhere else. Now, we can have a whole discussion about that in a different show. And that's more of a religious show, I would say. But the fact is, we happen to, you know, first of all, if anyone believes in any, I would say, major religious, you know, belief, right? Like, you know, the predominant ones, right? You would believe, let's say, in Adam, right? And so if you believed in Adam, then you believe in Adam's creation, for example. If you believe in Adam's creation, you believe that there was a before and after Adam's creation. So if you start going back into that time, you know, a lot of things can start, clearing up a little bit. But some people say we don't believe in any of that. But that's okay, too. I mean, you know, people have, again, free will, as you said. We believe what we want. Doesn't matter. The one thing that is fact is that we're all going to depart from here. We're going to have an actual awakening into the real world that is beyond this. And then whatever that means at that point, it's based on what we did, how we did it, what beliefs we took. Did we accept some things? We did not accept things. And that's all there is. But the fact is, you're right. It's comprehending this. It's just too much for our brain to really accept. I mean, right now with physics and quantum physics, I mean, there's things that we can explain from that level. And it gets to the point that everything is literally the same matter, the same, you know, subparticles. We're all one thing. We're all energy. And so what I'm seeing right now, what you're seeing here is not even what it's supposed to be. We're just a bunch of electrical signals in a way. So when you start talking at this level, like people, they just get lost in like, whoa, take it easy. I'm not electrical signals. Well, you know, it's funny. I always give the analogy of binary code, right? If you look at binary code, that's what computers are. That's what programming is. But when you write code, you basically just a bunch of commands that are translating zeros and ones, and you have a visual. You have, I mean, look, AI can draw things for you, right? And put, you know, videos from nothing, right? And create these images and stuff. And it's all code, right? Well, we're just maybe a higher version of all that. You know, there's ways to even, you know, put a comparison to these things. And sometimes it just becomes too much to comprehend or too taboo to discuss. That's the other part. I mean, people sometimes they don't want to get into that because they are afraid that they're going to say the wrong thing. The fact is, there is a bigger world, a bigger universe, a bigger, you know, I mean, there's like, we talk about multiverse, for example, we hear that all the time, and different dimensions and so on and so forth. And these are all concepts that are acceptable in a way, because you can physically, you know, state these things. You know, time, for example, you know, is a fact. In time and space, I mean, there's all kind of theories out there, right? From the Big Bang theory to all kind of, existing, you know, I guess I would say beliefs in how this world has come to play. But at the end of the more we understand these things, the more we can comprehend some of these transitions, for example, that and life and the connections, the energy. You talked about how you felt those goosebumps, right? And we do, like, you go somewhere that is maybe not very bright, you know, like, let's say you go in a dark space, you feel like some sensation crawling. I mean, we could talk about a whole world of other creation that is available in this particular universe that we don't even comprehend. There's all kind of stuff. I mean, you talked about angels, you know, and their power. There's so many things that are, you know, beyond our imaginations, because we haven't seen a lot of this stuff. We experience things, but we don't understand them because it's not tangible the way we used to stuff. Like, I pick up this mouse, I know it's a mouse. I know what it is. But things that you're talking about, sometimes they'd be like, I don't know what you mean. That, you know, I think we lost a couple of people already on the show because they'd be like, we're talking about stuff that is like, you know, so beyond, you know, right? But I'm just going to that point that you said infinity is something, it's what it is. We know it as infinity because there's no end to it, you know? And what does that mean? Is there a potential end to it? Maybe. We just don't know what that is. We haven't comprehended this universe. I mean, you look at, I love the, you know, some of these, like Star Talk. It's a very cool, you know, thing that I follow. And Neil, I think, he's an astrophysicist. I love his stuff. And anyway, so sometimes I look at some of the work he does and things. I mean, amazing stuff that he talks about, you know, in terms of science and physics and time and space. And even the galaxies. When you look at galaxies, I mean, we're in this tiny little pebble called Earth, and it is a tiny little sand grain in this particular solar system. And then the Milky Way, and then the Milky Way is part of this nice little, you know, conglomerate of galaxies. And then there's other galaxies. And that's, you know, when you look at, you know, trillions and trillions of galaxies in one known universe that we can see, then you know there's a better power, there's more stuff that we can understand. And we just, you know, one little piece of this whole universe and energy part of it. So it goes literally deeper than that. And we can go philosophical on this. We can go, you know, astrophysics on this. I mean, at the end of the day, we can go religious on it. I mean, it all combines in a way. But you're right, it is difficult. And the more we kind of just cool it off and just, you know, understand that it's part of life, as you said, you do the work to help people in transit, and that's all there is. And you changed that. You changed a lot of lives, I think, personally, you know, based on the work you've done. I don't know how many years you've been doing the work you've done, but I'm certainly, you know, aware that it's thousands of people, you know, that you've possibly touched on a day-to-day basis that help them, you know, see, understand, and transit. You know, one way, I mean, about transit, not necessarily even the loved ones that stay behind, you help them transit from that, you know, situation that they're in, right? From that particular point. And it changes lives. And folks, that's life. It's difficult. It's complex, but it's also simple and beautiful. And your concepts of the pebble business and those five things that you actually share with people can make a difference. Now, I try to expand a little bit on this whole thing with infinity, and I just, you know, got carried away because I love that this whole thing. But the fact of the matter, you know, how can people work with you actually now? with either your corporation or your company, you know, and also with your charity work? How does that work for you?
Well, what I do is Tobias and Company. So you spell it all out, tobiasandcompany.com. I have a Love and Learn collection that we're just about to launch. And, you know, I have like graphics, t-shirts, puzzles, things like that, that say like grief. It just one simple graphic talks all about grief. I have HSPs, highly sensitive people, because I'm one of those. And I have red flags of a narcissist, because I had this vision after number three of standing in line behind somebody wearing a t-shirt. It took me 63 years to figure it out. So what can I do to help others not have to experience some of the pain that I went through? So teaching others is what I do, and especially young people. So that's Tobias and Company. And our giving back division is Embrace the Angel. So embracetheangel.com. And you can actually see me in my tiny home. There's a little 2-minute trailer on there. You can see Grace's angels, our little 9-year-old that collected 164 angels from kids around the world, including refugee children from Ukraine that we put onto a silk satin 16-inch pillow, at all 164 angels with really inspiring words in between that we donate to kids. And we actually sent some of these pillows back to those very same Ukrainian children so that they could actually see their angel on the pillow. So the power of that was amazing. And we have silk scarves and ties with various angels on them for, you know, males and females. So that's our giving back division. And we give out these little pebbles as well. But you can purchase them as well on embracetheangel.com. Or you can go to my name, Patty, P-A-T-T-I, DiMicelli, DiMicelli.com. And learn about my work with as a doula and a grief educator. David Kessler, I was certified through David, and I moderate for him every Monday. He has Tender Hearts, which is a global community of grievers. And every Monday, I'm one of his moderators. So, you know, I think when you were just speaking, one of the themes I think that has kind of been connected through this whole discussion between you and I, Hurricane, today, is connection. And, you know, when people are grieving, it's the tendency for us is to like isolate and kind of lick our wounds, which is not bad. It's totally healthy and normal. But connecting with others is so, so very important, and asking for help. So I think that it's the connection that we have. And, you know, David's Tender Hearts is one way that people, like, you know, 300-400 people around the world that are grieving connect. And he's got a ton of resources about grief and grieving too. So yeah, I feel very, very blessed. I got certified by David 3.5 years ago, and there's a group of us that have stayed together, grief educators, that we still do work. Grief Loss and Loss Community is a Facebook group that they can connect. But I also have Patty DiMicelli on Facebook and Instagram and Embrace the Angel. And yeah, so you can also contact me through any of those websites. But PattyDiMicelli.com is where a lot of my work is explained, if you will.
Well, certainly. Thank you. And again, I mean, people, sometimes they feel lost. And, you know, some people have their own churches, their own, you know, I guess synagogues or mosques or whatever systems they go to, or temples, and they have their own clergy. They can help them during this time. But sometimes people may just stay neutral, and they want someone that is, you know, expert in this matter to help them, you know, guide them through this. And they do need the grief part of it, and they do need to speak to someone, they need to help. You do provide that service in a way, and so you're available to them through your network as well. Not only you, but your network as well. Sometimes people need, when you hear the stories from others, it feels a little better and it soothes a little bit, you know, because it gives you a little acceptance. So it changes things. I mean, this can work on your physical and mental, you know, aspect of things, and also your next part of life. I mean, how do you go from this point, right? And I think that's the difficult part for everyone, because life goes on in a way. And so with us, without us, we're like, the motion to train, you know, is going to continue. The motion is going to continue. And so understand how to do that. It's always a big deal for a lot of people. And the work you do and the access that you have as a resource, being a resource yourself and your groups, is going to just make that difference for people. So again, folks, if you're watching or listening and you do not have any particular angle, you know, when how to deal with it, and you need some additional assistance and key, you know, terms or key tricks and tips to work with this, you can do that through the work with Patty and you know, yeah, check her site, and we'll have that on the description of the show, and see how you can particularly connect with her. Or maybe you can, I don't know, you can participate. There's different ways you can do this. And of course, support the business, you know, because that's an important piece, because that keeps things going in the right direction. I mean, you know, it's always, you know, understanding something that nothing is free in this world, fortunately, and we have to create opportunities and revenue generating, you know, things to keep, you know, the missions, you know, alive of a lot of things. And that's why even the biggest charities, they do have some profit, you know, pieces to their business to make sure that they keep, you know, alive and stuff, other than just, you know, fundraising kind of concept. So there's all that stuff. So it makes a difference. So Patty, we've exceeded an hour, but you know, it was fun. And this is like an intriguing discussion as just a whole concept, you know. But what would you just leave our audiences with in terms of just one piece of advice?
Well, in addition to connecting, I want to share with you Amber's message. This is her message, not mine. She wants me to explain and to tell people that her message is hope, heaven, which is here now. It's not a place or a destination. It's when we drop the veil, the cloak. Hope, heaven, and the miracle of life and death. Death, as much as birth, is a miracle. And we are here on earth to know this, to understand it, and to find meaning in our little tiny miracles, our grief, our sadness, our heartbreak. There's meaning there. And just being with each other and being kind and gentle. You know, some people just want to smile, just want to be seen, literally seen and connected with. And I think all of us have the capacity, no matter what country or what language you speak, to smile and to see another human's angel.
Well, thank you. And a smile is a charity as its own, right? So, you know, you give a lot of that to people, you change their life. I mean, it's fact, right? The more you smile at people, the more they smile back. I mean, I have yet to see, if you smile into somebody's face, that they'll just frown at you. I mean, there has been experiments where you start smiling, or even, you know, get into the next level of laughter, people start laughing for no reason, right? It's contagious, right? And it shows that you're not, there's no animosity. It shows that you're positive. It shows that you are, you know, a happy person, and it just delivers that energy, as we talked about energy, right? It kind of gets there, right? You can sense those things. So yes, thank you so much for that advice, because I think we need all that. I mean, again, we started this discussion where we live in a world that's turmoil based and all crazy stuff, but having hope, love, peace, smile, you know, faith, all these things can make a difference. And you know, one person at a time. I mean, we all can make a difference. You know, don't think about the big picture, just think one moment, one individual at a time. And that, you know, that's how we can do that ripple effect, as you said. I mean, I love that concept about the pebble. I mean, you throw a little thing in the water, in the pond, and it just keeps like rolling, and the effect is phenomenal. How many, you know, things, you know, can move at that point, right? So we can make that slowly. And by the way, I love your concept. Maybe people can adopt that, you know, having a little thing available here, just take this. And, you know, I think it doesn't cost a lot to do that. I mean, to really do it and just cheer up somebody on a regular basis. Like, we do have the holidays, and people typically are happy around the holidays, but, you know, who says that it's only limited to one time of the year? We can do this on a day-to-day basis and change people's lives, as you said, with a smile or some gesture that. So thank you so much for that work that you've been doing, and for your message, and really just, you know, keep it up. I mean, we need people to bring hope and love in this world, and you're living up to that mission, and you haven't given up on it. And thank you for actually even going into these shows and sharing your story and Amber's story and the things that you're, because you're making it available to people now. So thank you. All right, folks. We're at the end of the show here. I'm American H. Hope you enjoyed this one. It's a little long. It's fun. It's a little maybe controversial to some, but it's really deep stuff. You know, just sink it in and you'll get the picture. And of course, do connect with Patty's, you know, websites. Check out the description of the show. And that's all there is. We'll be talking soon with Daniel Show on the Topic. I'm American H. Bye for now.